Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Welcome to Real Jam Radio. I'm Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to be with you for this episode. I have on a new guest, somebody that I've actually never talked with on a podcast before, but somebody who I've known for a little while and really enjoy their work, and that's Tom Haberstroh of BR Mag and the growing Leverage the Chat network. Does a wonderful job, and somebody who thinks about the NBA in a broad perspective, which is something that I have always enjoyed for Real Jam Radio guests. And so we actually recorded this on Thursday. Some other things came up, and so it took me a little while to edit this, but not that much has changed during that time. Sometimes when we reference something like the Warriors Hornets game had happened the day before, so things like that, but generally speaking, you know where this is going. So it was a really fun conversation, went in a lot of different directions. The teams that were contenders for the championship, which is where we started, a lot on health and maintenance and rest, because that is an important part of where the league is going. And as you would expect with the two of us, a lot of other areas. This podcast is brought to you by DraftKings. You can try out Daily Fantasy for yourself. Go to DraftKings.com, use the promo code RealGM, and you can get entry in some awesome contests. You should check it out. I've really enjoyed it. It's a new way to connect with the NBA. It's something that, you know, obviously I'm connected with it, but it's a new way to do it, and I've heartily enjoyed it. So conversation with Tom runs a little less than an hour, and I hope you enjoy it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Danny.
Where I want to start with this is something, it's always hard when we're as early in the year as we are and when the playoffs are as far out as they are, because it's still a long, long ways away. But you do think about, you know, what teams are competing for a championship, what teams are threatening the Warriors, because I think they're their own thing, and we'll talk about that later. But so, from what you've seen so far, who would you consider true contenders to win the championship this year?
I only have two teams right now. I have Golden State, the obvious pick, and I'm sold on the Rockets. The D'Antoni offense, I just thought that they wouldn't be good enough defensively. I was always sold on them offensively. Like, adding Chris Paul, a Hall of Famer, one of the best point guards in NBA history, the idea that he wouldn't be able to gel with James Harden, that never made sense to me. So I get it offensively. That was never the question. But defensively, the fact that they're sitting so high in the defensive ranks, I didn't see that happening. I mean, it kind of makes you think. In the 2017-2018 season, Tom Thibodeau has a bottom five defense and Mike D'Antoni has a top five defense. You know, it's like, it is really hard to wrap your head around the fact that a team led by Mike D'Antoni and James Harden and a fairly young big man in Clint Capella is a top five defense. But they've really added some really good muscle. I mean, PJ Tucker, Luke Mbamute, Chris Paul on top of Trevor Ariza. That's a really good wing core. Defensively. And that's exactly what they needed last year. They needed two things. One, wing help defensively. And two, a guy who can relieve James Harden from having to go 40 shots a night last year and do everything for them, creating offensively, bring the ball up, draw all those fouls, get to the rack, basically one of the only creators in that offense. And now you have Chris Paul who can relieve him of that. I think they're going to be a legit contender. I just think it's going to take an injury from Draymond Green, from KD, from Clay, from Steph to make it happen. But they're one injury away from being the favorite in the finals.
And I like that you use that phrasing. That was something that Mark Cuban actually threw out there in terms of, I think it was in the open court that they did with owners, about that's one way of thinking about where you are, is how many injuries you are away. And I think the Rockets are the closest right now. You know, Cleveland, we still have to see it. But that's the hardest part with them, is obviously LeBron is still the same, but they are a fundamentally different team now. Their personnel has shifted dramatically. We haven't gotten to see them at anything close to full strength. But Houston, conceptually, like I fixated on them as not only as soon as they made the Chris Paul trade, because I thought that shored up, as you said, one of their big weaknesses, but then the way that Daryl Morey approached the rest of the offseason. So, yes, they did give up a lot. I think while we've seen what Indiana got in the Paul George trade look a lot better now than it looked when the trade happened, we'll see how much of that holds. I mean, I think that Houston at least came close in terms of what they gave up in the CP trade, but they were able to fill those gaps with players that were a better fit for where they needed to go. And Morey deserves a lot of credit, and D'Antoni for playing the guys and everything like that, for understanding that the lens, the prism for this Houston team, which, again, when you have Chris Paul, your window for contention is as soon as possible. That's the way this always works. And so what they did is they said, what do we need to face the Warriors? We need versatile wings that are not reluctant shooters. And while P.J. Tucker isn't always the greatest shooter in the world, he's not always reluctant, at least not in the, like in the playoffs last year. And so they got players that made sense with what they needed, and they had limited means. Getting Nene back, they have a deep center rotation, but they don't have to go to traditional centers all the time if they don't want to. So I think they are very well situated in the moment for it. And I mean, it's unfortunate that we're not going to get to see the Rockets and Warriors play each other that much, but that's the series I want to see the most in the entire playoffs.
Yeah, that's the championship to me. I still think Cleveland defensively, I'm just not sold. I just don't see them being a top 10 defense come playoff time. And I keep harping on this, and I know this makes me kind of a hater from that. People call me hater Stroh for this point, which is I get that the Cavs were 12-1 heading into the finals, but it was a very, very shady 12-1. They got an injury from Isaiah Thomas. They got an injury from Kyle Lowry. And the four game series against the Indiana Pacers was like the closest sweep in NBA history in terms of point differential.
So, and it's not like that was a great Pacers team or anything. And I think the quality of opposition is an exceedingly important point here. And it's not like the Warriors played great opposition either, but the Warriors won the finals 4-1.
Right.
So it's a very
and the
different
thing. Cleveland's defense wasn't good up until that point. Like, that's my thing is they let up something like 110 or something around there points per game to the Indiana Pacers. And then they had the gift of not having Kyle Lowry for half the series and not having Isaiah Thomas healthy for that series. So I'm just a little bit skeptical that you can point to last season's postseason run as evidence that they can flip the switch. I was not a believer in the flip the switch. I thought that the fact they had a 29th ranked defense or something like that after the All-Star break was more of an indicator of their defensive aptitude than, say, how they fared in the win column for the first few games of the playoffs. And I think they just kind of got by the skin of their teeth in a lot of those games and just got, you know, some lucky breaks. And you need that to get to 12-1. I'm not saying that they weren't a good team. I'm just saying if we're measuring them against the Golden State Warriors, I don't think they got better. I think they got worse since last year.
It also comes down to a basic question, which was also true last year, but we thought because of the 2016 finals that maybe it didn't matter as much, which is who's going to guard Stephen Curry?
Like, yeah.
They have some strong defensive personnel, and you know Tristan Thompson has done well on switches in the past, but they just don't have I think they can do a better job guarding Kevin Durant this year than they did last year, where they got into awkwardness when LeBron lost his ability to be a center fielder for part of the time because they had to choose between either basically letting LeBron run the defense or letting LeBron guard Kevin Durant, because you can't do both of those things at the same time. Getting Jae Crowder really helps that. That's one of a series of problems against facing the Warriors. And they also, like, the best players defensively are not good offensive players, and their best players otherwise are not good defenders. And they're, like, Isaiah Thomas, you know, he can try at moments, but he is exploitable in a way kind of like Ryan Anderson, where you don't have to do too much scheming to take advantage of that. And when we're talking about a playoff series, it's so entirely different than the regular season because you spend 4 to 7 games and all the prep days in between, because remember, you get more days off usually, thinking about one team. And so those sort of weaknesses come into play. And so Cleveland's really their theory of the team in terms of how they could win the championship, and this is true either against the Warriors or the Rockets, is they have to outscore them. And certainly for a game or two, they can make that happen, maybe even 3, depending on how everything shakes out. But it's going to be hard to do that. It's not like they have necessarily, especially with how they construct their lineups, more firepower than those teams. It's just that the variance of each team, you know, it is a make or miss league, will lead them to some wins. And I just don't think that's a stable enough foundation to expect a victory. It's possible. I'm not going to say, oh, they have a 0% chance of winning.
Right.
But when you're looking at it, you have to go, for me, for Cleveland to win a series against either of those teams right now, you're saying a lot has to go right for them and a lot has to go wrong for their opponent.
Right. And LeBron James is making a lot of crazy shots recently. I mean, the late game shots, it reminds me of Russell Westbrook last year, where we were all kind of like loving it because it was such great theater. And it was like, oh my God, look at that step back that LeBron had. And he's had so many of those step back threes to like ice the game or win the game down the stretch. I just don't know how sustainable that is going forward. Right now, LeBron's shooting 43% from deep. It's not like he's shooting more of those three pointers, but just in late game situations, I think he's trusting that shot a lot more. And he's been just unbelievable in clutch situations this year. I've looked at this because of Kyrie Irving doing that vegan story. Kyrie Irving has, I think, 74 points in 46 minutes of clutch time, which is absurd. And LeBron James is right there with him. Actually, if you look at a win probability added perspective from unpredictable.com, a great resource for you nerds out there, LeBron James has added more win probability, quote unquote, to his team with his high leverage shots down the stretch than Kyrie Irving has. And I just don't know if that's sustainable. Right now, their point differential, Cleveland Cavaliers are plus 3.6. That is seventh in the league behind the Spurs without Kawhi and behind the Utah Jazz. Okay. Even with this 14 game or 13 game win streak that they're on, I just don't think overall that they've shown me enough that they're going to be still in that tier with Golden State and Houston.
It's also really hard to prove yourself against teams that aren't as good as those best teams. And you know, we're not saying Golden State right now, especially is as good as they're going to be in the playoffs. Like, I don't think we're going to carry too much away from the Christmas Day game this year or their MLK game.
Especially if Steph's not playing, which, yeah, I don't think he's going to. I think if you yesterday, Steve Kerr was saying, you know, this is going to be good for our team. He was actually looking at this as a positive, which, you know, you always have to play that those gymnastics of, like, as a coach, you don't want to be rooting for injuries, right? You don't want to be like, yeah, I'm glad Steph got hurt. No, you don't want that. But what Steve was saying is, we're going to learn a lot about our team. I'm going to get some different looks, and it's going to create some friction. Like, it's going to create some uncomfortable on-court interactions, which is kind of what Eric Spoelstra talked about when Chris Bosh got hurt in 2012, I want to say it was, when he got hurt with the ab strain, and he liked it because it forced him to think outside the box and create some adversity for his team to force those uncomfortable decisions. Like, hey, Shane Battier, you do have to play more at the four because we just don't have Chris Bosh anymore. So from that perspective, I think it's interesting. I think Zach Lowe wrote a great piece for ESPN.com about this. We're going to learn a lot about KD, about Draymond Green without Steph here, because in the past they've been 9-7 with Steph Curry sidelined. It's not a great record considering how good that team is. I mean, they have the regular season record, and without one player on the floor, they're basically a 500 team. And I think they got to be better than that.
They do, and this is also a fundamentally different situation than a lot of the other high-profile injuries the Warriors have had because of the timing. So Steph Curry got injured in the 2016 playoffs. That's in the playoffs. You have to think about this entirely differently. They ended up winning that series against the Rockets, ended up being, I think they were up 2-1 on the Blazers when Curry came back and had that crazy game, and we don't need to talk more about how he looked the rest of those playoffs, but that's a very different constraint. Last year, Kevin Durant got hurt twice, February and later. So that you deal with that entirely differently. You're kind of trying to get things together. You don't know if they're going to be back for the playoffs. Curry right now, as long as they're not worried about a recurrence or something like that, this is still an experimentation time. It could affect their seeding. You know, if they go more towards that 9-7 idea, then with how hot Houston's playing, you start to get into those sorts of things. But outside of that, the structure of this is so entirely different that they're going to experiment with it. They're going to see what works. And we saw some of those elements. Draymond didn't play on the game on Wednesday against Charlotte, which the Warriors ended up winning. But I saw a couple things from Kerr that were encouraging for me. One was the idea that they've done before of playing without a traditional point guard. Really, at this point, with the guys they have, with Iguodala, Kevin Durant, Draymond when he's healthy, they don't need a primary ball handler in that way, on that four. Of course, they can help. You know, we talked about that with Curry and Paul. It's still true. Paul and Harden. But it always helps, as long as there's not too many cooks. But they can use
piece
a guy
it together.
Like, what?
Yeah, you can piece it together, yeah. The ball handling.
And with that kind of talent. Like you saw that. You were there in person. Like with Quinn Cook, they didn't ask Quinn Cook to just run a bunch of pick and roll. They asked Quinn Cook to hustle, to get into position, to take open shots, and to try on defense. That's what they need from a nominal point guard. And so that doesn't have to be a point guard if you have Clay on those guys sometimes.
Right, right. It's something that Eric Spoelstra really struggled with in the 2011 team. If you remember, they started Mike Bibby for the entire playoffs right up until game two that they subbed in Mario Chalmers. Because the way it was Mike Bibby on paper was the more traditional point guard. But when you have Dwayne Wade and LeBron James and Chris Bosh, you don't need a traditional point guard because everyone else is a de facto point guard. So in the same way for Golden State, I like that they started Quinn Cook because A, it was like, yeah, we're going to start Quinn Cook. Like, what are you going to like? We got Kevin Durant on our team. We got Klay Thompson. Like, even though without Draymond Green, we can just take a guy off the G League team and insert it into the best team in the NBA. And we won't blink. And they kept Sean Livingston coming off the bench because they want to monitor his minutes. But, you know, this is when they get creative and they get to experiment a little bit more. And I think it just like makes for some more excitement. And you need motivation from KD. You know, he's won the title. Maybe he just needs like a few weeks to just be the guy again, and he gets to do that. So that was encouraging.
And there will be times in the playoffs where they need him to be the guy. And it's also worth remembering that this Warriors run does not happen in the same form, if it happens at all, without an injury, because this opened up with Draymond Green playing because David Lee had a hamstring injury right before the start of Kerr's first season. Kerr intended to start David Lee at power forward, and it's entirely possible with how much better Draymond Green has gotten that that just would have become untenable. We don't know that for sure. I don't think Kerr is ever going to answer it openly just because there's no benefit gained for it from that perspective. Maybe long after he retires, he'll say something in passing. But those forced innovation times are essential to almost every successful team because that's when you really get a sense of it. And I mean, sometimes that's not really what leads to it. I mean, that's not what led the Spurs to Tim Duncan. But you see those kinds of injuries or different things that just get you in a different place as a part of a lot of these very successful teams.
Yeah. And you are going to have those adversity. Like, I just feel like at this stage in the game, you're either experimenting or you're trying to build good habits. For Steve Kerr, he's already built good habits. I mean, this is the same team basically since last year. And we want to say, oh, they got Nick Young and oh, they have Omri Caspi. Like, this is basically the same team as last year. So now he's trying to experiment. And I think for a coach, that might be healthy is to like, okay, all right, what do we look like with Steph out of the lineup? And does that help in terms of being so dependent on Steph Curry? Over the last few years, the on-court, off-court differential between Steph Curry on the floor and off the floor is gargantuan. And this isn't a case where a couple years ago, James Harden, like the Houston Rockets, were better with him off on the bench than they were with him on the floor. Kawhi Leonard, I think, had some of that last year. Pretty consistently, the Warriors have been falling apart without Steph Curry on the floor. And they go from being a juggernaut, all-time juggernaut, to being basically another team, a 500 team. So why is that? Like, it shouldn't be the case that Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, and Klay Thompson can't blow the doors off of opponents. So they did last night. The Charlotte Hornets, they came back a little bit and made it a game down the stretch a little bit, but they're not intimidating defensively. They just aren't. And so they could survive with Quinn Cook out there being the starting point guard because they just had too much firepower. And Dwight Howard, after the game last night, he was shooting free throws and making every single one. After the game at the practice court, he was out late. And the way that the Charlotte Hornets practice court works, there's giant windows out on the street in downtown Charlotte. And so there's this huge crowd of people watching him. And I'm sorry, Dwight, like, it's not a problem of making free throws in practice. It's not. It's about making free throws in games. And you found out, I mean, last night he had an okay shooting night from the free throw line. But I don't think teams are scared of the Charlotte Hornets playing defensively. And certainly the Warriors weren't last night.
Yeah, that was something that struck me in the game. I mean, MKG is still a wonderful defensive talent, but he's just not, he doesn't have enough to make the best of the best sweat enough. And it's true, you can make an argument that almost nobody does. Like, Kawhi Leonard, congratulations, you are the guy who can still make that happen. But that's a challenge. But I think one of the, what's going to become a storyline, this is something that you've monitored for years, is the way that the best teams handle rest and handle workload. Because I think for D'Antoni, a lot of it is just the way that he approaches these things. But when they're healthy, the best players on the Rockets are working, their workload is a lot higher than the best players on the Warriors. And I would say Cleveland's is too high as well. LeBron will take days off. Yep. He can control his workload a little bit more just because he has unlimited equity. But I think that could end up being a factor. And what's hard is there's so many different things in play that you never, like, even if, let's say, the Warriors beat the Rockets in six games for whatever reason, you can't say, oh, it was because they were tired or something like that. But it's just something that I want to keep monitoring for this year because it's such a dramatic difference.
I was there for the Harden disappearance game, like the Harden ghost game. And it was incredible to watch. You know, he didn't talk after the game. He didn't talk to the media. And he just kind of disappeared against San Antonio. I think it was game five, was it? It was incredible. He was a zombie out there. And Mike D'Antoni, after the season, he admitted that they probably pushed him too hard to get to that MVP. And that's my question here, Danny, is what if James Harden is the leading MVP, you know, come March? And maybe the smart thing from a medical standpoint is like, hey, let's just pull off the gas a little bit. Chris Paul, you're going to start on back-to-backs with we're going to give James the night off. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he wants the MVP this year. And I wonder if he has outgrown that idea where LeBron's like, I'm cool with MVP as long as I'm in the championship. Like, that's all I care about. I don't know. I think James Harden is still going to go balls out to try to get that MVP. And right now, I think he's the leader. Tim Bontemps for the Washington Post did a poll, and I think James Harden is head and shoulders above the rest of the league. And I wonder, are we going to be running into the same problem where James Harden is going to be exhausted come the semifinals time, and that's when he needs to be freshest?
That's also when he's going to be facing the best defensive opposition. You know, there are a lot of, and this is going to be a playoffs in all likelihood, whether you're the one seed or you're the four seed, where the West, if they're healthy, is good enough that teams are going to be challenging every round. This doesn't mean they're necessarily going to lose, but facing Utah, if they make it, facing OKC, obviously, because they're just monstrous defensively, like, those teams are going to take a lot out of you. This is not going to be a four games, just perfunctory, you're out there for 30 minutes a game, that sort of thing. And with Harden, I'm genuinely unsure at this moment whether that motivation is going to be dissipated should they ever win championships or win enough championships that ends up being his motivation, or whether this is just who he is, because we have seen this now for years that he has pushed for it. And there is a part of that that is good. You know, there's a part of that being competitive and wanting to do it is a good thing. But then there's a part of it that sees the long game. And what I think about with this is something that Draymond Green said at Media Day. I think it was last year. So the Warriors, you know, they were about to, they eventually were going to be in their third consecutive finals. And what he said was, I have had to change the way that I treat the off season because I know how long my seasons are going to go now. And there was a maturity in that answer and an honesty in that answer that maybe it's because Harden has never had the opportunity to share that kind of a thing, but I just don't see that from him. And the margins are so close that you need to have that approach, because if the other team is fresher than you are and they're close, that's a material advantage.
Yeah, and I think he has like a $2 million MVP bonus or something like that for with Adidas. There's some crazy number.
I mean, for him, I mean, you think about how close he's just in terms of not the non-monetary part of this, but the ego part of it. It's like, you know, you've been that close. You think of yourself as this special player because he is. And he is. You want that reflected. You want that on your legacy. You want that in there. And Harden has had a more varied career just in terms of being that sixth man of that super fun OKC young team. And I think he wants, you know, the equivalent of he wants this on his basketball tombstone. He wants it to be that for 1 year he was the best. He was the best guy in the league. And I mean, he's already seen two of his former teammates get that honor, have that on their basketball tombstones. And I think he wants that. And I'm sure he feels that the year that Curry wanted over him more narrowly, that he was the best player that year. So I can understand why he wants that. And I'm guessing he doesn't feel that and being competitive for a championship are mutually exclusive.
No. And that might be the case. I think this stretch to start the season that they're going to be number one in the standings over the Golden State, I think it kind of reinforces the fact that, like, you can do both. You can be the best team in the league and you can be an MVP. And I think that's really fascinating is, you know, what if it takes like a couple games down the stretch and LeBron James is just going full bore and he's playing. He's like, I don't know, jockeying for MVP. Maybe I play that extra game here and there. I don't know. I don't know what that does to his postseason chances, but I think right now Houston thinks that they can take down Golden State. You know, I think that they really believe it. Now they're 18-4. They're right there with a point differential. I think Golden State's at 13 plus 13, which is really, really good. And Houston's at like 11 with Chris Paul. They're just blowing the doors off of people. So I think they're a legit championship contender. I can't say that I'm willing to go there with Boston. I can't say that I'm willing to go there with Cleveland. I think they're in this conversation, but really it comes down to two teams for me.
Well, Tom and I still have plenty more to go through, but I want to take a little bit of time to tell you about DraftKings. The NBA season is at a good point now because you know especially if you're listening to this podcast, who you think are the best players in the league, who are really going to put up the best stats in the league, and maybe other people don't. We're still in that time where these things are getting figured out, and so a great way to test your mettle and have some fun watching games is through DraftKings. There's a great mix of public contests that have big cash prizes or private contests if you want to be competitive with your friends. Something that I've really enjoyed on DraftKings as somebody who's pretty new to the daily fantasy world is that you can do beginner and casual contests so that you're a little bit separated from those more seasoned people. That's something that I've just really enjoyed with it, and I've loved that they have the flexibility with it. And also the flexibility that you're not tied to a team the whole season. I'm somebody who grew up on year-long fantasy in basketball, in baseball, in football, and if there's somebody you really want, especially in a dynasty league, you just don't have access to them. But if you feel like LeBron James or Giannis or Steph Curry is going to have a big game on a given night in DraftKings, you can just have them. You can have them on your team. They will take up a larger portion of your salary as long as their algorithms think they're going to be good too. But you can do it. You can make it happen. You can build the best team possible. And I do really enjoy that. And so the way that you can connect with DraftKings and tell them that you came from us is you go to DraftKings.com and you use the promo code RealGM. And if you do that, then you get a share of a big money prize on that day. And you should definitely check it out. And again, it's DraftKings.com and then the promo code RealGM, and there are all sorts of different kind of contests. You can win cash if you want to do that. You can win bragging rights with your friends if you want to do that. You can presumably do both if you're good enough. You can get cash and some bragging rights. And lots of great options, whatever you find that works for you. If there's a specific slate of games, or really, well, there's a lot of flexibility, customization with it. So you can find something that works really well for you. Basketball, football, both going on right now, both really exciting to do in this format. I've really enjoyed both of those. And so again, DraftKings.com, RealGM promo code, tells them you came from us, gives you entry into some big money contests, and I hope you really check it out. Disclaimer, minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Boston is an interesting one in this conversation because they deserve full credit for how well they played overall this year. And it is worth noting that they've come back to earth a little bit after that ridiculous run, and full credit to them for doing that. But what Boston's approach has this limitation to me is that if you're switching a lot, if you're doing all that, it is always going to create problems against the best of the best because those players are going to be able to attack the inferior matchup. And one of the problems for Boston is there is a concentration right now of the best players on the planet. You know, Cleveland has LeBron James and a lot of really good support players. The Rockets now have, you know, two dominant offensive players and a lot of defense around that, and the Warriors are the Warriors. So I think there is an element of it for them where it's like they can be a wonderful regular season team, but you need to have elite personnel to do it. And they do have very good personnel at full strength. And, you know, I want to see what this Boston team can be, you know, fully realized. And I don't think we're going to get that this year. Even if Gordon Hayward comes back for the playoffs, it's just not going to be there. It's not realistic to say that. So with Boston, that's why I'm still fixated on the idea of them adding somebody else. I know that in Bontemps' straw poll, Kyrie Irving was higher on the MVP than I would have had him for various reasons. But I still think they need that guy who can be the best player on the floor, not just for the last five like Kyrie can be, but who can be the last player on the floor against the best of the best.
Yeah, Tim Bontemps texted me and he asked for my poll. I think I put Kyrie at number five and he was stunned that I had him that far down.
I didn't have him in at all.
So I had James Harden, LeBron number two, Steph number three, Giannis number four, and Kyrie number five. And I joked with him that Ish Smith was a close six. But I think Kyrie has done a great job of being the closer. We already talked about it, 74 points in 46 minutes. He's got 10 assists and zero turnovers down the stretch in clutch situations. Can't take anything like those clutch wins and that performance down the stretch. You can't take them away. That has to be a part of the equation. But he's still not a great defender. He's been good. He's been much better than he has been in the past, but he's still not the distributor that I've always wondered if he can be, like a James Harden who's going to be able to just spray the ball around and get 10 assists a night. He's just not that guy. And he's been just about the same from an efficiency standpoint. His numbers are not that different from last year. It's just he's having a lot better performance down the stretch. So I think Kyrie Irving has outperformed my expectations in terms of the team and the schematics and the defense and just being a leader for that team. But I still just question whether they're outperforming their point differential now, and it's going to level out at some point. Maybe Brad Stevens is a freak who can actually coach clutchness. I think the Celtics do believe that there's a little bit of that, is that you might not, the clutch might not be real for players, but for coaches, there might be some schematic things that they do that promotes winning in those tight situations. And maybe Brad Stevens has the secret sauce there, but I just don't know with that team, how young they are, whether they're going to hit a wall with Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart and Jason Tatum, whether they're going to hit a wall at some point and they're just not going to have enough energy in the tank and they're going to be relying on Kyrie Irving for just about everything.
For me, the coaching and the execution, it's more than a tiebreaker. It can be a real difference maker, but it has to be close enough to make that work. And Boston, you talked about, you know, overachieving their point differential. I think the biggest thing that they've done is they've outperformed their talent level. You know, they yeah. have really good players, and full credit to this is a challenge, and I get a ton of crap because I wasn't super high on Jason Tatum coming in. And you run into this challenge with a player like Jason Tatum because he has absolutely been better than I expected him to be as a rookie. And, you know, I think I had him sixth or seventh in the draft class. He has also been put in a very favorable situation. That is no detriment to him. That is not saying, oh, he's crap and he's put in this situation. It's like, no, he was, you know, defensively, he's put in a spot where it's more about switching than staying with your guy. He can do that. He's a smart kid. He works hard and he's making a ridiculous amount of his threes. I don't expect that part of it to continue. So a talented 52%. Guy put in the perfect situation doesn't make yeah. him great. It means that he's doing a great job. And you can do well with those players. You can win a bunch of regular season games. We saw this with the Atlanta Hawks as well in that season, especially if you execute defensively. You can beat the bad teams all the time. You can get a lot of wins against the medium teams, and you can beat the good teams sometimes. But the playoffs are an entirely different animal. Execution helps. I mean, we've seen this with the Spurs all the time. But you need top-level talent, and you need undeniability. Boston has undeniability in Kyrie Irving, who has proven it on the biggest stages humanly possible. There's nothing left for him to prove in that way. But the thing that he does still have to prove is, can he be the linchpin of a reliable offense against a great defense? He can definitely carry it for periods of time, but the system can do certain things, but the best teams, including the Warriors in this way, and I think of them for this, one of the things that makes them great is that they break down your offense, that the ball movement and all that sort of stuff, just they make you an isolation team. And Kyrie is a wonderful isolation player. But I'm going to need to see more from them to say they can handle that kind of heat.
Now, this is where I'm going to start plugging my story, Danny, for a BR Mag, the vegan story. Kyrie Irving is moving away from eating meats. I don't know if he's still a vegan or if he's eating eggs, which is actually vegetarian, but not necessarily vegan because it's an animal product. But a lot of people I talk to, like nutritionists or coaches or players, is check back in April. Check back in June. Let me know how he's doing on that diet. Because right now he's playing incredible basketball, especially down the stretch. But a lot of people are skeptical that he's going to be able to have the same sort of energy moving away from animal proteins, not to get nerdy, but moving away from that and still being able to maintain this level for 8 months, you know, and for the top of the top, which is what Boston wants to be. I think they expect it to be this good eventually, maybe not this season. But I'm curious to see if Kyrie Irving's going to be able to keep this up. I really am. I'm not totally sold that switching your diet and looking the way he does is going to be sustainable in June. I just don't know. Maybe it will. He can prove me wrong. But it's really hard to keep up this kind of performance from an energy standpoint for 6 months straight and then go into the playoffs. So that on top of it, you know, the fact that he's shooting 49% from the floor is incredible and he's finishing at a high rate. I just don't know if it's sustainable come May. That's my thing. It's so good so far, but I just don't know if it's sustainable until the playoffs.
The regular season is a grind. It's a very long grind. But the playoffs are both a sprint and a marathon at the same time, is you are dealing with maximum effort for different periods of time in an entirely separate way, and you're facing opponents that are approaching it the same way. So you have to be at a very different level physically and mentally, and players have talked pretty openly about how draining that can be And I don't know if the animal protein is going to be a factor in it. I feel like Kyrie exists at a plane when maybe even plants and animal, the distinction doesn't matter to him anymore. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he could generate some amazing quotes on that. But
the quote, Danny, verbatim was, once you are awake, you don't see that stuff anymore. I don't know what that means. When I was like, hey, do you think you need to eat? Like, it seems crazy to me that you're giving up eating meat as a pro athlete. Like, that seems like, you know, that seems kind of crazy. He's like, once you don't see that, or once you're awake, you don't see that stuff anymore. I'm like, I don't know what that means. Like, that is weird. I don't know. I need like a dictionary for that.
I want to go back because I asked him after game 7, I asked him on the podium about whether he could appreciate that moment, hitting a game-winning shot in the NBA Finals, something every kid dreams of, at the time, because it's something very different. You know, you can look back and tell his kids about it and the world that he eventually rules about it. But it is I don't remember his answer. Now I want to go back and listen to it. I don't think he had one of those amazing quotes on it, but Kyrie's a fascinating figure. And we can get into the vegan piece. There's the point that I thought was most interesting about it is where it intersects with generally where the league is going, which is that the NBA is becoming a leaner, faster league. And if becoming a vegan, taking not only the animal proteins, but also just a lot of the crap out of diets is the way to do it, then maybe more power to it. It's kind of like, you know, the ends justify the means in that way. And you could argue the means justify the means. We're going to have to see that. I'm not saying, oh, veganism is a bad thing or anything silly like that. But it kind of gets players towards where the league is going anyway.
Yes, yes. And it's just cutting out the fat, and quite literally. The funny thing is Black Trey, who's on the Leverage of the Chat, he's on our podcast with Basketball Friends and Bomb, Nice Kicks Pod. Black Trey, he's a vegetarian, and he played collegiately. He tried playing at the pro level. I mean, he knows a lot of NBA players, and they're all saying the same thing, which is they were eating crap. Growing up, they were eating crap and just eating tons of candy, fried food, just not a lot of vegetables. And now when they're at the mountaintop, they can't get by eating that stuff. They can't get by eating, you know, putting basically, you know, just soda in their gas tank. They can't. And so I think there is this kind of come up for a lot of players, which is there's so much money to be had right now. So much money with the TV deal. It'd be stupid not to make sure that for this window in your career, this just, you know, from 20 years old to 30 years old, you're just going to maximize as much you can in your life, whether it's sleep, whether it's nutrition, whether it's just stress, general stress and meditation or whatever it is, you want to maximize it and, you know, bank all that money. So I don't know if veganism is propelling Kyrie Irving and Garrett Temple and Wilson Chandler and Damian Lillard. What I do think is real science and real actual gains to be had in the NBA is just cutting out the fat, just not eating crap, not going to bed at 5 a.m. just because you can. And you talk to players and they're practicing very good sleep hygiene. By that, it's just a nerdy way of saying, like, take the phone out of your bed, you know, keep it in the bathroom. Don't watch Netflix in bed all the time. Because take the TV out of the bedroom. Make sure that when you go to bed, you have a blinder. All this stuff is just promoting good natural sleep. And I think a lot more players are into that because it is a marathon. It is not a sprint. And they want to make sure that at the end of the day, they get the most out of this window of being an NBA player, because it's not like any other profession where you might look at it as like a 30-year career. This is like a 10-year window, and sometimes 2, 3, 4 years where they got to make as much money as possible. And there's a lot of it right now.
And it is a big change. I mean, you think about where these kids go, and I mean, whether it's, you know, how, so, you know, sometimes, especially for the players who grew up poor, and there are a lot of them, that it's harder to make healthy choices in that way. I mean, there are lots of studies about this in terms of produce, in terms of a lot of different things, and also just the fact that you're living your life. You know, it basically basketball at this point, other than the travel part of it, which is a big thing, and that's been well discussed and will continue to be because it needs to be, they also have the means to make good decisions. And I think what they're finding out is not only is there an incentive to do it, but they can actually get results. And I think that's a really important part of this too, is that you have these incentives in place that, hey, if it gives you 1%, that 1% means a whole lot in terms of winning, in terms of money, in terms of happiness, and the fact that it's kind of a short-term sacrifice. And the other part of it that's really heartening to me, and this the John Sally part of your piece got to this, is these are just abnormal human beings in terms of the way they're built and in terms of their size. And so it could also have these spillover benefits for the rest of their life. I mean, maybe they're not going to keep the sleep habits and all that stuff going, but the idea that there are different challenges for being 6'7", 6'9", 7 feet tall, and having these healthy habits can make life a lot better for them.
Yeah, and I think there is a great mystery, which is why do NBA players keep dying at a young age? And, you know, in that story, John Sally ran through like a roster: Sean Brooks, Moses Malone, Anthony Mason. You go on down the line, a lot of these names, it's sad that they're not with us anymore. And so you can look at it from a medical standpoint of maybe there is a heart disease or a genetic thing that they just could not have escaped. But a lot of the time it's, you know, the travel, and we're learning more about travel and health and how it's just deteriorating and increasingly cumulative, where if you travel back to back to back to back to back for 6 months straight and you take a couple months off in the off season and don't do much traveling, like that, it doesn't matter how much time off you have in the off season, like you can't undo all the travel that it takes for an NBA player to fulfill an NBA season. It's just so hard. So it's really like it makes you think in terms of diet, in terms of sleep habits, what's the best way to maximize performance and off the court, just longevity and stamina and all that, good health. But, you know, it just gets to the fact that the NBA is faster than it's ever been. I mean, in this generation, it's been about 20, 30 years since we've had pace this high in the league. I think the stat in the story was in 1997, the fastest team in the league would be by far the slowest team today. It's just an incredible acceleration in the league. And I think a lot of it has to do with quick three-pointers, the Steph Curry effect. But I think a lot of it is just the information that we have medically about sports science has promoted guys training in the off season to maximize their fitness and to be healthy for the season, because you're going to need it. You can't sleep and expect to survive in this league.
And I don't expect any of those factors to really change. And we could even see it accelerate when some of the players who don't fit that bill get out of the league. You know, as we start to see these ground-bound centers, they're not being eliminated, but as we see them being marginalized to a point, you know, maybe they're playing more in the 20 to 25 range as opposed to 30 to 35. That will fundamentally keep changing the league, and that will enable guys that are further away from that to survive and to thrive. I mean, yeah, there are players in this league that are going to get beasted by Joel Embiid and whoever else, and, you know, he's a freak in a couple different ways. But if we can see traditional fours starting at the five, then that opens up a whole new world in terms of pace. It opens up a whole new world in terms of spacing and a lot of other things. And so I think it's just going to keep going in that direction. And there will always be aberrations. Like, there will be players who are so good at what they do that it changes it. But also, the way that you have the sophistication in terms of approaching it, I think double teams are way better now. Like, the way that certain teams are able to attack these slower moving offenses, especially when it involves a post player. Like, those sorts of things aren't changing. Once you develop an attack for that, you can do some counters, but with throwing the ball to a guy in the post, other than quick duck-ins and moving quickly, there really isn't that much you can do. There's a limitation to it. And so as we move away from that, you're going to incentivize a lot of these other pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah, speed is just always going to be there in basketball. And I think aesthetically, it's a great thing for our sport. I love the way the rules have changed over the years to promote speed and get guys up and down the floor. There might be a little bit of a negative externality with that, just on an injury level, is whether the bodies can hold up for 82 games playing at this speed, at this pace. And we're certainly seeing injuries up in the first quarter of this season. You know, I've asked around recently about whether the shortened preseason has anything to do with that. And it's kind of an open book there. But I would say that I think, just generally speaking, it's a great brand of basketball. And the 3-point shooting, I know not everyone loves it, but I think the general approach is it's really fun seeing a ball go from very far away into a hoop. It's kind of fun. And so as much as we want to see, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon down on the block every single night, or Patrick Ewing, those guys were maybe once a generation type players, once a lifetime type players. And so I think this generation watches Steph Curry and Dame Lillard and James Harden, and they're blown away by it. And it's inspiring a new group of players.
And along those lines of inspiring a group of players, something that I've been thinking about a lot, and I look at Boys Among Men, which is Jonathan Abrams' wonderful book, on my bookshelf, and I've been thinking about how I think the NBA is better situated now than it has ever been to handle young guys coming in, because now they understand what kind of investment it is. This isn't going to be a player like Jonathan Bender or Jermaine O'Neal, I think, slept on one of the Davis brothers' couch. Like, we're not going to see that anymore. You know, this is a different world. And so in terms of the age limit, like, they know what they're dealing with now. And what the other thing that I was thinking kind of along those lines is, I don't think there's a way to make this work stronger than that, but I've been thinking about how getting into healthy habits and how important that is, and also how in certain situations means can be a limiting factor there, just because that's the way all of us live. You know, like, you can get into healthier habits when you have the ability to do so. That maybe, I don't think you can get into the academy system. I don't think the NBA is ever going to do it, but wondering about if there's a way that they can have a little bit longer reaching tentacles than they have right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it also, LeBron James effect, where LeBron James is preaching, you know, what his off-season training regimen looks like. It isn't necessarily work hard round the clock. It's a lot of just recovery stuff, cryotherapy, or if it's these LeBron bubbles that he trained on before every game this season that I wrote about for BR Mag. Like, these little gimmicky things where it's very clear that LeBron James's body is his temple, you know? And he makes it cool, right? So the VersaClimber is another example where, like, just a social media campaign of like, oh man, I'm climbing a mountain today on the VersaClimber. This is exhausting, but strive for greatness, right? He's making it cool to care about your health. And I think that goes a long way with the next generation, is they're looking up to these guys and they're influential. You know, if it's cool to wear strobe light sunglasses and try to train with these goggles on that make you kind of look silly, like, if Steph Curry's doing it and Kawhi Leonard's doing it and it's cool, I think just a whole generation is looking up to it and saying, like, I don't care what I look like as long as it's going to help me improve my game.
And also the financial incentives. You talked about how it affects the players that are in there in terms of veganism. I mean, I'm sure that there are kids that are looking at the bright line and either seeing also that basketball, if you're good enough, is a much more sustainable career than something like football. Yeah. But also the fact that it requires this level of diligence and effort is a good thing, because, I mean, you hear a lot of times, like, one of my favorite questions to ask a second-year player is kind of like, what you wish you would have known when you started, or like, what maybe you were told but you just didn't get a full sense of it. And what a lot of them say is just how hard it is, how long a grind it is. And so Now with social media, with everything else, I think people who are talented enough to make the NBA are getting a better idea. And that was something that used to be more of a competitive advantage for players who had experience with that, like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and all these kids that are the children of NBA players, where they had a better idea. Tim Hardaway Jr. had talked about this. I talked with him about it once. Now it's a lot easier to see what the life of an NBA player is, because they're sharing their lives in a much different way.
Yeah. And it's important. I think just because you get to know the NBA players more about their lives than any other league. It's true that you get more of a off-court feel for NBA players, and you're just more intimate with NBA players because they're not wearing a mask, right? They're all on the floor all the time, whereas in baseball they only get up once every four innings or whatever it is. And when a guy is playing in the field, you never see him. And so I think there's just this intimacy and this authenticity to NBA players that I think is only going to increase, just the transparency of what they do in the off season and the type of food that they eat, the type of recovery systems that they use on the road. Like, all this is just getting started, and it's going to be fascinating to see where, like, you know, gambling, this is a whole nother podcast, but like, when you talk about transparency and wearables, and when players are sleeping on the road, like, how many hours of sleep they get, like, we're going to get to a very Orwellian society where we might know before we place lines on or place bets on the line you know, how much Jason Tatum slept the night before a championship game. Like, that's going to be information that might be possible in 5-10 years, because I think this is where it's trending. Is just, I mean, we know already how fast teams play on a miles per hour, how much distance they travel. I think it's only a logical extension to believe that we're going to get that kind of biometric data to make this league just that much more interesting. And it's just a matter of the MBPA, the players union, figuring out how to monetize it and make sure it's secure and safe and that it's not going to be used against them. But this whole health craze in the NBA, it's just getting started. I really think it's just getting started. And gambling and the transparency of information, I think it's just going to be crazy how the league is going to be so much more information and a meritocracy in the next couple of years.
So you're saying we're going to have more advanced analytics than the last tweet of the night for J.R. Smith, using that as a calibrator for how he's going to play when he was on the Knicks?
Yeah, and how many IG models that an NBA player followed in the past 6 months? Like, yeah, I think we're going to get a lot more sophisticated data on that front, but that's not to say that J.R. Smith, that data isn't fun to just track on your own. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, we're going to see kind of where all this stuff goes. And then the other element that you were talking about, you know, like kind of why the NBA can be a glamour sport. And I think you talked about just the amount of time that they're on the field of play, or that they're involved in the actuality. The other part of it is that NBA teams and NBA play takes on so much more of the personality and the temperament of the players. So, you know, like a Steph Curry team is going to look fundamentally different from a LeBron James team, irrespective of their surrounding talent. Like that, like the NBA, they do that. And it's also true with role players. I mean, you saw this last night with JaVale McGee. Like, a JaVale McGee experience is something separate. And that's true of players that are good. That's true of players that are bad. And in basketball, you'll find somebody that speaks to you. You'll find somebody, you know, whether it's Ricky Davis, like it is for Zach, or whether it's, you know, whoever, you'll find somebody that you enjoy watching, somebody that can connect with that. And in basketball, you'll get an element of that experience when you watch them play.
Yeah, totally. You know, I just think the 3-point shot in general is an equalizer. So mm-hmm. You don't have to be 7 feet to be successful in the NBA. And I think, you know, Steph Curry's proving that. Last night, Steven Silas was subbing in for Steve Clifford, and I hope he gets back to the sideline, Steve Clifford. But Steven Silas has known Steph for a very long time because of their Charlotte connections. Paul Silas is Steven Silas's dad, and he was the head coach for the Charlotte Bobcats a few years ago. And so he saw Steph at Davidson and was like, that guy has, it's very questionable whether he has the body to make it in the league. Make it in the league. Just make it and be like a real player. And he went and became the MVP and the first unanimous MVP in the league. So I think the 3-point shot is a great equalizer. You know, it's not just like Jimmer Fredette's going to be able to be an NBA player. You need a little bit more skill than that. Nothing against Jimmer. But, you know, I think the way you have to have a diversity of skills, it's not just athleticism why Donovan Mitchell has been so good this year. He's got a great shot and he's got a great dribble game. So it's not about just defense and dunks. He is super skilled. Same goes for Aaron Gordon. I mean, talk about most improved player candidates. He's been fantastic. It's not just that he's a great athlete. Like, these guys have really good skill, and it's because of that 3-point shot. I think a lot of players are just trying to add new weapons to their game.
On top of that, and that's a great point, it feels like players are being more encouraged, especially bigger guys, to have a little bit more diversity in their game, to be able to handle the ball a little bit. And they've been empowered more than they would have been in earlier generations, where that would have largely been a superfluous skill. And handling the ball is fun. I was never particularly good at it, but it was still fun. I was more of a soccer player and was better at it there. But you have all of those elements in play. And so a guy like Joel Embiid, you know, he has unusual skill sets, and shooting, you talk about how shooting threes is an equalizer. It's only an equalizer until the big guys start doing it too. And then it becomes a different conversation. I mean, watching Karl Anthony Towns and the way that he can move with the ball in his hands for a guy his size is incredible. And so I'm excited to see where that part of this goes as well, where you see these physical talents that didn't grow up with the saying of, oh, you're big, you have to go stand in the paint all the time. And if that leads to another revolution in this, I'm here for it. I'm ready for it.
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, KP, Porzingis, Giannis, Embiid, it's crazy the size that we're seeing with these players and what they're doing. I mean, LeBron just kind of started it, but then there's like Ben Simmons as well, where it's just, how is it possible these guys are that big?
And Simmons is 6'10". Like, people lose sight of this sometimes because of the nominal positions on it. Ben Simmons is a big dude. Like, he's not big like Porzingis is, but I mean, he's huge, and he's handling the ball. He, and what I love about Simmons is, Brett Brown, to his infinite credit, is just running him like a point guard. It isn't any of this stuff. Offensively, it's no bells and whistles. He is their point guard. He is their Mike Conley type guy. I mean, obviously, you can't shoot off the dribble like Mike Conley can, but he is filling that role. They're not. It's not like they're giving lip service to somebody else. They're like, no, he is our point guard. He's just not necessarily guarding point guards. That's his spot.
Yeah, it's fun. It's great. And we're already just jaw-dropping looking at the rest of the league with Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Giannis, KP. I'm just so thankful we're at this stage in the NBA where these guys are all like just getting their drivers. I mean, not the driver's license, their drinking license. Like, they're just about 21 years old. It's so crazy. Donovan Mitchell just turned 21, you know, and Devin Booker, you know, he's out with a groin strain now, but he backs up a 46-point performance or whatever it is and comes back the next night. Just an amazing score. And I think he's, what, 20, 21? It's crazy. He dropped 70 points last year as like a 20-year-old. That is wild. We're in a great state in the NBA.
And there's no reason to believe that any of these guys are going to peak early or something like that, that there's player development is going to shift. So, I mean, we can expect to see, this is not even close to the best. Well, maybe close, but this is not the best Giannis we're going to see. This is not the best Joel Embiid we're going to see. And so how these guys develop, I mean, remember the guy that I think about with this is LeBron, because we're the same age, is how good he was at 19 and 20. And you were sitting there going, is he really going to get that much better than this? And the answer was yes. That doesn't mean all of these guys will. That doesn't mean all of these guys are going to become MVPs. But you look at the arc of this and you say, this is where it could be going. And it's just so exciting.
Yep, I'm here for it.
anything else that you feel like we need to go through? I think we've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, that's just about it. I've got a podcast, a food podcast, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, that might be what gets me into Top Chef. I've heard good things for such a long time. I am interested in cooking, and having you and Arnovitz talk about it is definitely going to add a little bit of a fire to it for me.
Yeah, it's fun. We're just going to be taking our breakdowns, just like with you and Nate, taking our breakdowns and nerdy stuff about the NBA. We're going to take it to this show, Top Chef, and it's called Pack Your Knives. Part of the Leverage the Chat Network. We got Zach Harper on it. We've got Waz Speaks from Big Waz. We've got Bomb Mondays with Mariano, Amin El Hassan, Black Trey. Waz on that one too. We have Nice Kicks. We got, yeah, Talk Hoops with Zach Harper. We've got the Basketball Friends is our big stage main course show. And we're having a good time. So if you if you're addicted to podcasts like most people who are listening to this, make sure you keep listening to Real GM Radio, but also adding some other stuff. If you're interested in food, if you're interested in politics, if you're interested in the NBA, if you're interested in the sneakers, we got all that for you. So come by, leverage the chat.
Yeah, I'm thrilled for you guys that you've been able to kind of take this in a lot of different directions that all fit what you wanted to do. So I'm really excited for it, and of course for your excellent writing work as well. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Danny.
Thanks again to Tom Haberstroh for taking the time to come on. You can read him at BR Mag, and you can listen to him on the expanding Leverage the Chat Network, including the new Top Chef podcast, Pack Your Knives, that he talked about, and numerous other ones. He did a great job of running through those. You can also, of course, follow him at Twitter, at Tom Haberstroh, TOMHABERSTROH. Really good follow, and I've really enjoyed the long-form pieces he's been doing recently, especially the veganism one, but just all over, and I think it's such an a natural fit for what he does well, taking a topic that many people, including myself, wouldn't even really think about, and then it allows you to think about, to engage with the league in a very different way. And that's something I, as a reader, as a consumer of content, heartily enjoy. And the thought that he puts into to even coming up with the idea for a piece, much less executing it, is very, very impressive. So hope you enjoyed that conversation. Still working on where I want to go for the rest of the year. There aren't really as many team-specific stories yet, I think, because a lot of that is still being written. For example, I'm recording this shortly before Kawhi Leonard returns, and so, of course, that's going to be a huge story, and so, you know, don't want to talk about the Spurs until we have a better sense of that. So I am going to do the broader scope stuff for a little while, and I hope you enjoy that. And then after that, we'll see. You know, the great thing about Real Jam Radio is that I have the power to kind of go where I want to go with it, and I will always go where I think the story is, where the conversation is, and doing it once a week, you know, that allows it. If you want more of like a daily, like what's going on, you can listen to the Dunked on NBA podcast that Nate Duncan and I do. You can also, if it's Warriors specific, you can listen to Warriors Watch, which is my Warriors specific podcast. And of course, my writing everywhere, you know, The Athletic, Real GM. I had a new piece on the Okafor Booker trade that came out this week, and I have some CBA encyclopedia stuff that's ruminating in my brain, and then the sporting news as well. So you can check that out there. You can buy my book, 100 Things Warriors Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It's out. It is a wonderful way to support me. It's also a good holiday present for those of you who are still looking for something. And I've been gratified and thrilled with the response so far. It was such a big part of my life for a period of time, and it was weird to have this gap between when I wrote it and when people are reading it, but it's been very exciting to see that out there, and to even after the whatever amount of month delay it was, unlike a piece where it's usually a day or two, it's been a different experience, and I've been very appreciative of it. If you have any feedback on this show, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com is by far the best way to do it. You take the time to write it. I will take the time to read it. I might not respond. I try to, but I might not. I have a lot of other things, but your input is important, and that's what you're doing, and that's what I'm promising to do. And you can also reach out or follow me on Twitter at DannyLaRue, DannyLaRoux. Appreciate that as well. It's a great way to see what I'm doing. I want to get better at using my Facebook page, but I make no promises. If you want to support this show, there are a lot of different ways you can do it. You can leave a rating. You can leave a review on the podcast player of your choosing. It's great if it's iTunes. They are still a behemoth in our industry, but if it's not, that's fine too. And subscribe, download every episode. Those are big things that are true for any podcast. And then, of course, checking out our sponsors this episode, DraftKings. You can try out Daily Fantasy, or if you've been doing it a long time, you can still do that. Promo code is RealGM. DraftKings.com is how you get there. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be fun to see where this goes. Probably going to do a Tears podcast at some point soon, whenever I can figure out exactly where I'm feeling on everything and get the right guest. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be exciting to see where this goes. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.